everyone, and thanks for joining FRAC's Summer Meals Matter series. My name is Clarissa Hayes, and I'm a Child Nutrition Policy Analyst here at the Food Research and Action Center. These calls are held the first Thursday of every month and focus on a different topic around the expansion and improvement of the summer nutrition programs. These are a great opportunity for you to hear more in depth about different strategies and partners, ask questions, and also share what you're working on. So I'm really excited about today's call topic, which is on food policy councils and the summer nutrition programs. With their understanding of the local nutrition landscape and focus on food access and policy, food policy councils are a great group to engage in strengthening the summer nutrition programs in your community. They can act as both forums for food issues and platforms for coordinated action, and they can be a great partner to bring to the table as you start to think about underserved areas you'd like to reach and your outreach plans for this upcoming summer. So today we're going to hear from four great speakers who will share insight on the role food policy councils can play in addressing the summer nutrition gap. After our speakers present, we'll open up the lines for questions. And like I mentioned earlier, you can feel free to send me your email me your question at chayes@frac.org. All right, our first speaker today kicking things off is Karen Banks from the Food Communities and Public Health at Johns Hopkins Center for a Livable Future. The Center for a Livable Future is a leader on food policy councils, and Karen is joining us to share more about the great work they do. All right, Karen, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Clarissa, and thank you for inviting me to speak this afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here. I am a program officer with the Johns Hopkins Center for a Livable Future in Baltimore. We're an interdisciplinary academic center that tries to understand the intersection between diet, what we eat, the environment where we live, work, and play, how our food is produced, and public health. Our work includes both basic research on the relationship between public health and the food system and the application or translation of that research into materials that can be used by policymakers, advocacy organizations, and communities. I specifically work, though, on a project called the Food Policy Networks. The goal of the Food Policy Networks project is to build the capacity of communities, citizens, and food system stakeholders to work together to shape their local, state, regional, or tribal food systems through public policy. We do this by providing research, technical assistance and training, and supporting networks at food policy councils. Food policy councils are clearly at the core of our work with the project. Simply defined, a food policy council is a local or state multi-stakeholder coalition working collaboratively on food and farm policy. In the United States, there are 246 food policy councils that we are aware of. This number has grown substantially over the past decade, with only 37 councils in 2006. Today, all but five states have at least one food policy council. Food policy councils aim to coordinate efforts of stakeholders within a specific geography or jurisdiction. The majority of councils, roughly 65%, operate at a city, county, or combined city and county level. There are 28 state food policy councils that work on state legislation or act as a convener of local councils or do a little of both. Each council is reflective of the community that it serves, bringing together a diversity of stakeholders from farmers to food distributors, chefs, nonprofit organizations, educators, advocates, small business owners, health professionals, philanthropic organizations, concerned citizens, and most importantly, government officials. Most food policy councils have some connection to government. Local government staff may be members of the council, or the council may be seated within a government, or it may receive funding from the local government. Less than 10% of councils have no connection to government. In bringing together diverse stakeholders, including concerned citizens and those affected by the issues, food policy councils create a space to call out the most pressing food and agricultural needs of a community. They serve as a voice for the community to influence their food system through policy. The Food Policy Networks project uses a broad definition of food policy, which includes administrative, regulatory, and legislative decisions made by government at all levels. It can also include businesses and decisions made by businesses and organizations that inform how, why, and when food is produced, transported, distributed, consumed, and disposed. So looking at the whole food system. Each year, the Food Policy Networks Project surveys food policy councils across the United States and Canada about their policy priorities and achievements. In 2015 and 2016, the top policy priority for councils was healthy food access. This includes improving opportunities for families to use SNAP benefits at farmers markets, or encouraging the development of grocery stores in underserved areas. And for some, this includes nutrition programs like the Summer Meals Program. Food policy councils interact with federal child nutrition programs in a number of ways. At a minimum, members of a council may work for an organization that focuses on the summer meals program and will report on the program's progress to the council. Additionally, members may belong to another coalition or network that focuses directly on summer meals programs. Another way that councils engage with the summer meals program is through data and research. Last year, the Food and Health Network of South Central New York launched an initiative to increase access to summer meals. As part of this initiative, the network conducted an 8-county regional assessment of the summer food service program. The assessment was called Closing the Gap on Childhood Hunger. The assessment gathered information on the number, capacity, and location of all summer meal sites in the region, determined the potential to serve additional children, and collected valuable feedback from summer meal sponsors and sites and community organizations. And finally, a third way that councils engage in summer meals is through direct advocacy. In New Jersey, the Passaic County Food Policy Council has a work group specifically dedicated to child nutrition advocacy. This council has also hosted a number of public summits for local government officials and schools to advocate for the summer meals programs in schools. In Hartford, Connecticut, the City of Hartford Advisory Commission of Food Policy made summer meals a policy priority in their 2016 Executive Report of Recommendations. The commission recommended that the mayor convene a task force on summer meals, which would include summer meal sponsors, the superintendent, and participants in the summer meals program, and their parents. The task force would be charged with identifying barriers and challenges to participation, coordinate communication efforts, develop citywide goals for participation and access, and develop a citywide marketing campaign. As you heard about the councils above, and as you will hear from the other presenters on this call, there are a number of ways to engage food policy councils in not only the summer meals program, but other federal nutrition programs as well. Because of the diversity of stakeholders that they bring to the table, there's a lot of voices that are present and a lot of resources that come to the table as well. If you're interested in finding out if there's a food policy council in your community, I welcome you to explore our directory of food policy councils on the Food Policy Network's website. Our website is www.foodpolicynetworks.org. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. That was wonderful information. And we will definitely send around the link to the Food Policy Network after today's call. So thanks for joining us and giving us that background. All right, next we're going to hear from Mark Furla from the New Haven Food Policy Council, who will talk about how they helped with outreach and promotion. All right, Mark, the floor is yours.
Am I there?
We can hear you, yep.
Okay, how long do I have?
10 to 15 minutes.
Oh, okay, all right. So my name is Mark Furla. I'm with the New Haven Food Policy Council, and I was a union organizer for about 13 years, and I think that has relevance because that's sort of how I found food. I had worked with institutional food workers, mostly K-12 folks, and the idea of organizing and building grassroots power is what really attracted me to food. The way our council works is, it's about 6 or 7 years ago, a lot of energy went into outreach across the city of New Haven to develop a food action plan, which established a broad set of priorities. And in the intervening few years, the council is organized into working groups. There are a few standing working groups. We have a food assistance, which I think is now a food access working group. We have at varying times had a policy working group. We have a community gardens working group. And those are broadly umbrella terms. They work in a variety of things. But 3 years ago, End Hunger Connecticut approached us with the idea of establishing a working group on summer meals. And I have headed that group for the last 3 years, in large part because of the organizing potential that I saw in that. One of the things that is, I think, particularly intriguing about summer meals is that in a lot of ways it cuts across race and class in an exciting way. And so to build a coalition around that, whether folks are interested in improving the quality of the meals, folks are interested in dealing with hunger issues, folks are a huge cross-section of things. And it's kids and it's hunger, and because it's a federal program, there's frequently minimal costs incurred. In a lot of ways, at least in New Haven, it pays for itself. And so I got very excited, and a number of members of the council got excited to try and build a coalition around this to improve things. And in New Haven, summer meals are served at three types of sites. There's summer schools that the city runs. There are affiliated programs that frequently use schools, so summer camps, park and rec. And a couple of years ago, the city, or the Board of Ed, got a mobile truck. So we have a number of mobile sites. And we've been pretty successful over the 3 years that we've participated, working with a lot of different stakeholders through the Food Policy Council, but also reaching out to previous connections I had with organized labor, and also a lot of our local politicians in New Haven. We have a board of alders, which there's 30 representatives for the city, to really drill down to make sure that the sites were the most efficient, to make sure that at the grassroots level, communities and neighborhoods, and in many cases, individual people knew about the program. Giving away food for free is foreign to a lot of folks. There can be a lot of suspicion and confusion around some of that. And working with our food bank, which was pretty successful. I'm driving, so I apologize. I don't have hard numbers in front of me. But what we've seen through a combination of this over the last 3 years is about an increase of about 30,000 meals served, which I think is about a 20% increase. The biggest leaps came the first and second year that the council was participating in doing this. And what we've been able to build on through the success is continued expansion. So another truck, mobile truck, was donated last year, and we started not just serving breakfast and lunch, but suppers, primarily through the mobile sites. The success of that program allowed us to kind of push the Board of Ed into creating suppers at the schools. So Haven has 45 schools, and last year suppers were served at 5 of those schools. The city and the Board of Ed have committed that that's going to be upwards of 15 schools this year. So all of which has been made possible by the success of the summer meals program, getting into the community. And this year, continuing to build on that, our food bank, the Connecticut Food Bank, at our, I think, three most successful — is such a crummy word to use, but because we're dealing with hungry kids — but our three busiest sites, the food bank set up mobile pantries so that we were serving adults and other members of the community who were hungry also. And again, I apologize, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but that program was, they found to address an almost undiscovered need that they knew. And my understanding is that they're revamping a lot of their mobile pantries to move them into the evenings. They were serving just huge numbers of people who had not been coming to some of their standing scenarios they were using. So It was bringing, for us, it was using the council with the different stakeholders, but really applying some grassroots organizing principles, outreach into the community, challenging other constituent groups, and thinking more broadly about who we could pull into this. Really building power to mobilize this and push even further. And so I think in that we've been very successful in a lot of ways. I do want to give a particular shout out to End Hunger Connecticut. They have been a profoundly powerful ally in this, and were the first folks to really bring it to our attention. And I think I'll close on that and allow for hopefully more questions at the end if folks have any.
Great. Thank you, Mark. I really like how you mentioned the partnership with End Hunger Connecticut. For any anti-hunger organizations on the call, it's great to reach out to the food policy councils, but the other way around, too, if you're kind of lost, the anti-hunger organizations, they have such deep knowledge of these programs and the underserved areas, so it really is a great partnership for all. So thank you, Mark. That was a great perspective, and there are wonderful things happening in Connecticut. All right, so we will go ahead and move on to our next speaker. Up next is Robert Leshin from the Massachusetts Food Policy Council, which has really focused on kind of meal quality aspect of the summer nutrition program. All right, floor is yours.
Hey, thanks, Clarissa, and good afternoon, everyone. So my name is Rob Leshin. As Clarissa mentioned, I am the state director for the Office for Food and Nutrition Programs at the Massachusetts Department of Elementary and Secondary Education. And I sit on the Mass Food Policy Council, so I'm one of 17 members in Massachusetts sitting on the council. A little bit of the history of the Massachusetts Food Policy Council. It's been in existence for only 6 years. It was established back in 2010. There's 17 members, four of which are from the state legislature. There's six members from various state agencies, and I'm one of them, so I'm representing the Department of Education. There's also representation from the state departments of Agriculture, Housing, Economic Development, Public Health as well. There's also seven industry representatives that are appointed by the governor, and this includes some local health departments, community-based nonprofits, farmers, some brokers, and other metro area planning councils and things like that, kind of on the local level. The council meets no less than four times a year, where we assemble together for official meetings. There's a lot of offline meetings and exchanging of documentation and networking that happens in between those times. So the council was created in 2010. A big product that came out of the council thus far, which was released in December 2015, was a Massachusetts Local Food Action Plan. So, this is a several hundred page document, very detailed document that outlines what the council sees as its action plan for local foods in Massachusetts. Some of that is coming out of what the purpose of the council is. So, for example, some of the items of the purpose of the council is increasing, the majority of it's increasing production, sales, consumption of Massachusetts-grown foods, develop and promote programs that bring healthy Massachusetts-grown foods to Massachusetts residents through various programs. This is where I come into play. At the Massachusetts Office of Food and Nutrition Programs, as my office, I oversee all of the USDA child nutrition programs, so the National School Lunch Program, Child Adult Care Food Program, Summer Food Service, as well as the Food Distribution Program, USDA Foods, Emergency Assistance Food Program as well. The increased state purchasing of local foods for school and summer meals and other child adult care programs, that was one of the original purposes as filed in legislation for the Food Policy Council. Increasing access to healthy Massachusetts-grown foods in communities with disproportionate burdens of obesity and chronic diseases. Some of that also lies in my area, the food insecurity areas of high-need areas where a good portion of our programs cover. So in terms of summer meals, it's interesting to note that was part of the original purpose as part of the filed legislation for the Food Policy Council. Of course, there's all sorts of other different areas, protect the land and water resources needed for sustained local food production, wildlife and fisheries, and all sorts of other things, considering we're a coastal state, obviously sustainable, fishing practices, as well as sustainable farming due to our short agriculture calendar and things like that were also obviously original action items for the Policy Council. So back to the plan, which I mentioned, the food action plan, the local food plan, was released in December 2015, and there is various goals and strategies, and a lot of them aligning with economic opportunity, farming practices, increased production and consumption of Massachusetts grown foods. But the one of the four main goals, part of the strategies of this several hundred page document, was reduce hunger and food insecurity, increase availability of healthy food to all residents. I think that goal is kind of where summer meals and some of the child nutrition programs that I oversee fall into play. And more recently, we've recently actually just outlined our six goals in a letter to the governor. One of which is comes out of that fourth goal, which is supporting increased purchasing of Massachusetts grown and produced foods. The current focus is to support increased purchase of local foods by state institutions, public and private educational programs, and meals programs, which covers the summer meals program. So that's that child nutrition meals programs. So it's interesting to see that on the summer meals side, obviously the action plan that we have as a overarching food policy commission, there's a whole boatload of other initiatives, because obviously the different perspectives of the members of the board, as well as the different public interest in a general food action plan for a state. But there is a big portion for food insecurity areas, and it's outlined especially for schools and summer meals program. In terms of summer meals and how it fits. So the work that we already do right now for summer meals outreach, as well as procurement, et cetera, for local foods, is pretty extensive. My office here, we work with different entities and different allied organizations to increase outreach. We work with Project Bread, especially the Child Nutrition Outreach Program, of which we fund. We fund with USDA funds. They provide outreach to increase the number of participants in the summer meals program, as well as increase the usage of local foods and making foods available. In terms of local foods, it's been interesting that the last USDA local food census, it was noted that the data came back where 68% of schools in the National School Lunch Program, so in schools in Massachusetts, reported that they have some kind of initiatives with local foods, versus 10%. So only 1 in 10 sponsors for summer in Massachusetts said that they came back that they procure local foods as part of their operation. A lot of that is pertaining to historically a lot of the different promotions that we have done, especially we have an allied partner, Mass Farm to School Project, as well as other partners. Obviously, there's always a focus with the schools and larger schools. I mean, I tend to think the school districts where they're having institutionalized business offices, procurement officers, they may be networked into different co-ops, and things like that, that can sometimes be easier to navigate the procurement pieces of it to make it happen. A lot of the sponsors that we have for summer, be it if they're larger, if they're nonprofits versus if they're, like a YMCA or Girls and Boys Club, or if they're summer meal sites from a public school. But some of the smaller ones, be it if they're you know, churches or rec centers and things like their libraries and things like that. A lot of them may just have small procurement, small informal procurement, and so they won't have such a larger procurement. They won't have different personnel who are experts in the areas, and they may not be focused in that. Some, if they're really small, they may be just going down the street, you know, to a store for their food, or they may just be tapping into, you know, say for example, if it's a summer site of a National School Lunch sponsor, and they already have established procurements, say with national distributors and things like that, they may be able to benefit from some of the, you know, different, say there was different specifications on some of that procurement that the larger school district did. For local foods, that maybe the summer sites, then as that school transitions to summer, they may be able to benefit from that. In terms of what we're trying to do here, we're really trying to focus on trying to increase the local foods participation. We're actually right now actively applying for there's an open USDA grant, a farm to school grant, which is due next week, and we're looking to really focus on the summer component. So we're really trying to increase that number. There's more than just 1 in 10 that are participating in local foods, and especially local foods procurement. In terms of our summer meals or program in Massachusetts, just to give folks some perspective, we have about 100 sponsors, which equates to about 1,000 sites, and I believe we have just over 800 of those sites are open sites. Our overall participation is a little bit over the national average, which overall isn't very good. So we're looking to always increase our participation, and we're trying to focus on a lot of the rural areas where we have open sites, and there's issues with transportation, among other things, and we're really trying to put a spotlight on that. And ensuring that our trainings and our technical assistance can help those sponsors out in the rural parts of Western Massachusetts, for example, to be able to have an increased participation. Actually, it's a big priority for Congressman Jim McGovern. Every year, we do we call it the Summer Rocks Tour. We spend a full day, seven a.m. to 5 p.m. out in Western Massachusetts, and we visit, almost six sponsors and six sites and a couple of roundtable discussions out in Western Mass. It's nice to have the congressional support, but also bringing in different community folks at roundtable discussions to talk about obstacles and how we can overcome them, and how can we, you know, create policy to help make expansion and increase participation happen. So it's nice having that those discussions. In terms of states and local food policy councils, or any advocates that may, you know, want to look to have summer meals, you know, be a part of it. I think it seems to me that I would think, and I don't have a lot of knowledge about other states' food policy councils, and I can imagine that the goals are very similar to ours, such as food insecurity and increasing the production and consumption of local foods and things like that. there's a lot of opportunities in the Summer Meals program, especially it's that hunger gap that takes place over summer. What I find neat about it is that there's a wide variety of different sponsorships. So, for example, in the school lunch program, you know, it's public, privates, and residentials, and childcare. It's childcare centers or daycare homes or Delta Health centers, and it's limited to those type of sponsors. And in summer, there is a more of a variety of different types of sponsors, be it recreational camps. Or other camps, religious camps, or churches, or synagogues, or, you know, youth centers such as a Boys and Girls Club, or at the higher education facilities, and all sorts of things like that. There's such a wider net of different types of sponsors, which then can pull in more people in the discussion of how to, food trucks and things like that, how to increase the participation. and address the different pockets of area. And I think, as we work closer with our sponsors, we work closer with, different ways that sponsors in regional areas can collaborate, maybe share procurement, maybe come together and create a larger pockets of regional procurement, things like that to make it easier for local farms and local producers to be able to see what's available and how do I contact and how do I, be able to respond to procurements, to be able to sell produce, et cetera, to these different facilities. And that's starting to bubble up. We're way ahead in the school lunch, and we're kind of in the front end on the summer side and trying to make that happen. And I think as the year progresses, hopefully we'll start to get there as we start to focus on the farm to school and procurement, with our summer kickoff trainings that we have, which is coming up in February. And start to entertain those discussions. Certainly being on as Food Policy Council helps in my perspective as I can spread my gospel on child nutrition programs and especially summer and add my two cents during the Policy Council meetings as well as have my say in terms of the goals and the action plan that gets developed and then ultimately gets disseminated. And it's been helpful in different ways. And in terms of right now, we've been applying for that USDA grant, the Farm to School grant that I mentioned. I've leveraged some conversations that I had on the Food Policy Council to be in part of our drafting and content experts and things like that. So it's been super helpful in that regard.
Wonderful. Thanks, Rob. That was really great information. I'm glad that you mentioned the USDA Farm to School grant. It is open now. It closes on the 8th, and you can find it by going onto USDA's grant page. It is for school-based summer sites and school-sponsored community sites, so just keep that in mind if that's something that you're interested in. The local food action plan that you all have is really great, so we'll definitely make sure that gets around after today's call. Great. So we will go ahead and move on to our last speaker. We're going to hear from Jenna Banning from Hunger Free Vermont, who is going to speak to the work being done in Vermont with more informal types of nutrition councils. Jenna?
Hi, Carissa. Thank you so much for having me. It's nice to informally meet all of you. I've been really enjoying this call. I'm actually a resident of Massachusetts originally, so it was really great to hear what's going on in my home state. Sounds like you're doing some really great work down there. Like you said, I work for Hunger Free Vermont. We are the statewide advocacy and education nonprofit dedicated to ending the injustice of hunger and malnutrition for all Vermonters. And one of the ways that we do that is through our regional hunger councils. These are groups of folks that come from a very wide background. So like Carissa mentioned, we do have folks from the government sector, and we do have kind of the traditional suspects, I guess, of food shelves and food banks. But I think one of the power of these councils is that we've also been able to include, like I said, a wide variety of folks. So we actually have bankers and lawyers and radio stations and just a broad coalition of folks whose direct day-to-day work might not actually touch on food, but by having them at these regular meetings and participating in the conversations, it has such a greater impact back out in the community. So we started these councils back in 2006, actually, in two of our counties in Vermont. And we've been gradually growing them across the state as more and more communities wanted to see these groups present in their own work. So ending at the beginning of this spring, actually, in 2016, we now have 10 councils that cover the entire state of Vermont. And I have the honor as a Hunger Council organizer to work with all of these groups, and that's roughly around 900 folks from across the state who are coming together regularly to focus on anti-hunger issues, which is really impactful. The groups meet primarily quarterly, so four times a year, focusing on different aspects of anti-hunger work. For example, we have two different meetings next week. One of them is going to be focusing on a state policy issue that affects food waste and food diversion. And then the other council is focusing on senior nutrition and how that's impacting their region. So it's really community-driven of what they want to focus on, but we do make sure that all of the councils throughout the year do touch on in some way summer meal programs. I think it was Mark who said earlier, they're just so powerful because they are universal. You can get every child in the community to get access to this healthy food, which is really important. So at some point during the year, the councils make sure that they're helping to promote where the open meal sites are. If there are programs that are already just doing a great job, helping to make sure that the word is getting out about where they are. And then some of our councils have actually really taken this on as a priority that they want to focus on very specifically. And that, I think, as I was preparing for this, was one of the takeaways I wanted to emphasize. One of the ways that you can use a food policy to be really important is sustained attention over a number of years. For example, we had a council down in southern Vermont, and it took them about 3 years to make this really important change, but it's now affecting hundreds of children that when the council started, they were at risk of losing their summer meals program altogether. So that's, I have a few different examples of ways that these policy councils or hunger councils have been really important. In that case, it was direct work, but there's also been some really indirect work, just using that broad coalition of people to bring pressure, both politically and socially, to make changes. So in southern Vermont, back in about 2011, the summer food sites were being sponsored by an organization. Wasn't the school district. The district at that time was refusing to sponsor it, so someone else stepped up and took this role. But by 2011, they said, you know, we really just can't handle this anymore. And at that point, we were at risk of losing about 14 sites across a very low-income area. And the council, which was really new, took this on as a huge galvanizing thing of we need to save summer meal programs. And like I said, it took about 3 years of working through the process of how would the sponsorship work, how would the community come around to this. But over the course of those 3 years, we went from 2011, there were 28% of the towns eligible to have summer meal sites actually participating, and that's grown now to 73% across the entire county of serving summer meals. So it's really important to have the sustained attention. There was actually a subcommittee formed that meets roughly monthly to be working on this issue, but it's had a really important change over the years. On the opposite corner of Vermont, a similar thing happened where someone came and said, we're at risk of losing our summer meals program up here. The operations have changed, how we're getting our food procured, they've changed that, and we just don't have the funding to make it possible. So they came to our Hunger Council. They knew that this was a group of folks who were really interested in different anti-hunger stuff. And in this case, it was successful through more indirect work. We were able to take that information, and through the broad network of folks from a wide variety of areas, they tapped into their networks, and we were able to find the funding to make it possible for this year. And what I'm really excited about, too, is because there was such a successful turnaround and we were able to involve the whole community in this, conversations are already happening of, okay, how do we not only make sure that this doesn't happen again, but how do we further strengthen and expand the programs? It's been a number of closed meal sites up there, and we're actually looking at now opening new meal sites that are open to the entire community. So it's a really exciting process that does take time. I think anytime you're working with community work, you have to have that sustained energy. But it's been a really positive thing as well. Other examples for how these groups work, we did do, just going through some different examples here. In central Vermont, somewhere there was another confusing summer meal sponsorship site, and anytime you're working with federal programs and trying to make sure that you have folks tapping into these, it really takes a lot of connections with community and conversations. So we were able to work. There was a group that came to us and said, again, we're having trouble with our sponsorship. How do we make this happen so our kids are being served? Another very low-income area and a very rural area, so transportation is something that we focus a lot on for our networks. And we were able, through the broad coalition of folks, to connect with other food service programs and just really making sure that the community was aware of it so that the participation rate actually increased over the summer. So that's just a very quick overview of things. Like I said, the biggest successes that we see are just by bringing that sustained attention to it throughout a broad range of community members. And having groups that are focused on this has been very important to us. So hopefully that's helpful for folks who are interested in perhaps tapping into their local food policy councils or connecting with the community to make these possible.
Great. Thanks, Jenna. I just realized that three of our four speakers are from the Northeast, so you guys are definitely doing some great stuff up there. So we have heard from all of our presenters, so I'm going to go ahead and unmute the lines for questions. And at the same time, if you are a food policy council on the line or anti-hunger advocate and you've done some great stuff with that partnership, we would love to hear from you as well. We have about 20 minutes left for the call. And again, if you would rather email me your question, you can do so at chayes@frac.org.
The conference is no longer in lecture mode.
All right, so the lines are open if anyone has any questions for our today's speakers.
I have a question.
Sure, go ahead.
Oh, okay, this is Sarah at Jefferson County Family YMCA at Olympic Peninsula YMCA in Jefferson County in Washington State. And we just applied for a USDA grant that seemed to be focused on procuring local food, supporting local agriculture. Is that different than the grant that was just spoken of, that was the Farm to School grant that's due in December?
So that does sound like the same grant, but we can also connect offline and we can chat a little bit more about that. But to me, it does sound like it's the same opportunity.
Oh, I see. Okay.
All right. Any questions? And we did have one come over email, so I'll go ahead and ask that and give folks more time to think of questions. But this seems to be for Mark. The question is, these are fabulous programs reaching rural populations, evening distribution, and mobile meals, but how do they pay for these? So I can let Mark, do you want to take a stab at, I know you mentioned mobile and rural, so if you want to talk about some of maybe where the funds are coming for that outside of the trial nutrition program.
Yeah, I mean, that is not my area of expertise, but I think that in New Haven we benefit from the extreme poverty in the city, and so everything is, I think too, like the way the laws work around USD reimbursement is basically every site in New Haven is an open site.
The conference is in lecture mode.
Okay. So that covers almost everything. We did have, with regard to some of the mobile stuff, I think over the last 2 or 3 years we've had 3 buses donated, smaller buses for distribution, but with regard to the food, the labor costs, preparation, that is, I'm with a high degree of certainty sure that that's covered through the USDA reimbursement. It obviously affects the quality of the food to some degree, but we have a great local director who does a really good job at providing healthy food to some of the kids. But our hope is that we can expand and improve some of that through leveraging some local funds. There's probably a more technical piece to it, but that's the best you get from me.
Great. Thank you. All right. And this is just a reminder that this is an open conference call, so if you are not asking a question, if you could just self-mute yourself to cut back on that background noise, that would be great. Thank you very much. All right. So we did have another question come in. This question is, transportation is a regularly cited barrier to participation in the child nutrition programs, especially for out-of-school time programs. What are some innovative ways you have overcome this barrier, especially in rural areas? So I think that this is kind of similar to the question we just had about reaching children in rural areas. So any of our speakers who want to take a stab at this are welcome to.
This is Rob. I'll try to address some of that. So there's a couple of things we've been seeing out there that's been working. Number one, the I guess the piece is in terms of open sites and things like that, it's really identifying what are the summer opportunities where you can find a lot of these kids, be it, you know, what's the most popular camps or if it's a specific town or a regional area, what's the most popular summer activities for some of these folks. And for kids that don't attend camps or not participating in a variety of different activities during the summer, you know, what are the most heavily trafficked areas, be it a library or a town hall or, you know, things like that, where we can, find some of these folks. I know that in terms of locations, we've been trying different locations, and some of it can get tricky as we're trying to obviously stay within the USDA parameters of what a site and what a sponsor needs to be in terms of what are the components for us to be able to approve it. In terms of safety of where it is, and in terms of what kind of enrichment or recreational activities are being offered, and so sometimes that can be tricky. You know, congregate feeding versus non-congregate feeding. We've been working really close with our regional office to kind of see where, not that we're bending, but where we can really stay within the lines in terms of ensuring that we're approving correct places. Senses that in terms of a lot of these rural areas, you have to get, a little bit creative to ensure that you are going to either, if it's an open site that's not mobile, that you're setting up shop in terms of in an area in a location that's heavily trafficked, we can get most of the folks. I mean, we have some, if you're talking about districts, we have some districts such as the Mohawk Regional School District, which covers a massive area in Western Mass. I think it's bigger than it's certainly bigger than the city limits of Boston and parts of greater Boston. So it's huge, and it could take, I know on the school lunch side, on the school side, from end to end based on where the regional school district, some kids on the buses, maybe on the bus for 45 minutes just to get to school. So certainly it's a large area. I think some of the, in terms of mobile sites or in terms of, food trucks, we've seen, those are successful. Those are great. There's obviously gigantic startup costs, and 9 out of 10, if not 10 out of 10, sponsors that have food trucks have obviously private donations to put up the funds for the purchase, and obviously the food and all that is reimbursable, and labor and all that is reimbursable through the USDA program. And most, if not all, sponsors wouldn't even have the funds to be able to put it up for those different types of things themselves. We were recipients, I think, of a handful of states that did home-delivered meals. We did a home-delivered meals demo pilot project out in Cape Cod. There's different pockets of Cape Cod that have, especially in the year-round populations, there's pockets of poverty, heavy poverty, on parts of on Cape Cod. And we did a demo project with the Cape Cod YMCA in Barnstable. And part of the grant paid for a truck, refrigerated truck to deliver meals to different housing projects in different areas. Unfortunately, when the project ended, we were hoping for continued funding for that, and unfortunately, we weren't able to get that. A refrigerated truck being able to deliver meals, if a USDA continues to put out waivers to allow that, that potentially could be, something that could work too. But the rural piece is tough. As many as you'd like to have open sites, the concept of open sites is great, but if you can't get the kids, that's the issue. And I think we are still, of course, with other states, we are still working hard to try to address that problem.
Wonderful. Thanks, Rob. And Jenna, did you want to touch on that? I know that you all do a lot of work with rural areas.
We do. Largely just echoing what Rob said, mobile food trucks, I think, are a really attractive option, especially at first, because you can get to those more remote areas. That said, just echoing, it does take a lot of perhaps outside funding and infrastructure to make sure that those are really successful. I think we have two really great mobile food truck programs up here in Vermont, but you know, one of them being the Shining Star can only make it to 7 towns in the, over the course of a week, one town per day. So it's really great, but it's still not reaching as many folks there. So as you're looking to other ways to make sure that kids are accessing these programs, making sure that there are activities going on, it's a great way to partner nutrition and educational. There's a huge learning gap that happens over the summer, so making sure that kids are able to access those can lead to some really creative partnerships, and it's really great for reaching these these populations who could really use those values. The other thing that I would recommend folks, if you have the capacity to try out, our subcommittee that focuses on summer meals with that Hunger Council down in southern Vermont, they've been going to a lot of PTA meetings and going to schools at the beginning of the school year and doing a quick survey either directly themselves or working with the teachers and asking parents, where are your kids over the summer? They learned that through a little bit of a learning curve. The year prior, they had actually tried to do a mobile food bus, and they found a ton of outside funding. They did worked really hard to make it work, and they had one child use that bus over the entire summer. So it was a bit of a tough learning curve, but afterwards they realized, like Rob said, you have to make sure that you're actually going to where the kids are. And so they learned that lesson. They've been going to the schools and figuring out where are students over the summer, where can we best and most effectively direct our resources to make sure that we're meeting the need. So it, again, that takes a little bit of time, but it's been a really valuable, we're already getting some data in already that's going to help shape our efforts for this coming summer.
Great, thank you. I'm going to go ahead and try to open up the lines again for questions. If you're not going to ask a question, if you can just keep yourself muted to cut back on the background noise, that would be wonderful.
The conference is no longer in lecture mode.
All right, so the lines are open for any last questions for our speakers today. All right, and it looks like we did have another one come over email, and it seems to be keeping with the transportation theme. This question is, does anyone have experience partnering with local public transportation systems to enable kids to get to sites, either rural or urban settings?
So this is Jenna with Hunger Free Vermont again. We didn't see it so much with summer meal sites. We're hoping to work towards that, but we were able to work with a regional bus line. They were joining the Hunger Council, I think, for a few times, and they realized that a food shelf, their operating hours were not coinciding with the bus line. And so they were actually able to change when that bus went through so that folks could get to the shelf, pick up their food, and then get back on the bus as well. So that was one really exciting success, and we're hoping to continue that and engage with the regional bus lines a little bit more for summer programs.
And this is Karen. I think there's two examples, one out of Montana and one in Huntsville, Alabama, where they've partnered with the local public bus service. They're both in urban areas to transport kids for free to summer meal sites that may be at schools. But I think, I'm not sure which the city is in Montana, but I believe in Huntsville, Alabama, they were successful at partnering with their public transportation department.
Great. Thanks, Karen. I was actually going to mention Huntsville. I think they actually gave the children cards or like the bus passes for free to get to sites. And I know that Texas has also explored doing some partnerships with their transportation system. So we can look into that and I can follow up with the person who sent that email. But thank you for that question. That was great. All right. So I think if we don't have any more questions, I'll go ahead and wrap up today's call. But I want to thank Karen, Mark, Robert, and Jenna for joining us today and sharing your expertise. If anybody on the line is listening in has any questions about food policy councils and how to engage them, feel free to reach out to me and I can connect you to our today's speakers for follow-up. But I hope this has sparked some ideas for ways to engage food policy councils around the expansion and improvement of summer meals in your community. So we will be recording this call and we'll have it up on FRAC in the next couple of days. And any of the resources mentioned today by our speakers will be available in our monthly summer and after-school meals newsletter, which goes out the end of the month. And while you're at FRAC, you can register for next month's Summer Meals Matter call, which is going to be on January 5th. So thanks, everyone. Have a great rest of your day.
You too. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?